You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, October 9th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Becky Bond, director of Credo Action, will be joining us to talk about the shutdown, the debt ceiling, the potential for a grand bargain, and a bunch of the campaigns that Credo has been waging and will be waging in the future. Also on the program today, I hope you like your chicken with salmonella. Salmonella outbreak. Furloughed workers, or at least some of them, brought back to the CDC. This is what they warned about: the lack of an ability to track foodborne illnesses across states. No word yet as to whether or not you can get a discount on that chicken, though. Janet Yellen will be nominated as the Federal Reserve Chairperson. By all accounts, she'll be nominated. The announcement will come today. Big win for the left. Obamacare doing much better in the states than it is nationally. Though it's not doing so bad nationally. Truckers, that convoy. Is it a convoy or a con? That's Politico. And this is lovely. War criminals gather at the Plaza Hotel in New York City and joke about it. That's right. Dick Cheney had a roast. And yes, folks, it's nearly, we're about 3 weeks away from Halloween. And you know what that means? The war on Christmas has started. This was actually very predictable. Year in, year out, the war on Christmas, sometimes it ebbs, sometimes it flows. And this year, I think we're going to see a lot of this. In the better half of the program yesterday, I did a random rush where he was talking about how it was so problematic the NFL is using pink stuff for this breast cancer thing, whatever, the pink flags, when they've got nothing to talk about with the Republicans. This is what you see. They raise the culture war to keep their rubes in line. And speaking of rubes and the recent polling, which shows that Republicans may be in trouble in 2014, Representative Phil Gingrich, Republican from Georgia, told Roll Call that Republicans were absolutely prepared to lose the House to extract concessions from President Obama, and said the White House, it's missing the determination of the Republican Party. Quote, I mean, they seem to think that we will miss this opportunity for a Braveheart moment to do the right thing for the American people, and that we'll back down for fear of losing the House and not gaining control of the Senate. Now, if I recall correctly, that Braveheart moment, I think, was when Mel Gibson had his head chopped off. Not retained his gerrymandered seat in Georgia and having millions of dollars in the bank and denying your own staff health insurance. I'm pretty sure that's not what the Braveheart moment was. Freedom means never giving your staffers health insurance while you've got plenty for yourself.
You're such a literalist Jew, Sam.
That's right. It is possible the Braveheart moment he was talking about.
Was Michael doing Gingrich or was he doing Mel Gibson?
Yeah, there you go.
It was Gibson's words as presented by Phil Gingrich.
Okay. There you go.
But I'm sure it could be the same.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Becky Bond. Now, note, we've been telling you for a couple of days that Credo Mobile is a sponsor of this program for at least this month. Maybe we'll go a little further. Go to credomobile.com/Sam to get the deal. But you will see after we talk to Becky Bond why I'm so excited about them as a sponsor. We've had other opportunities over the months, over the years for sponsors. Some we've taken, some we haven't. But in the main, I'm looking for sponsors who match up ideologically. And this goes even beyond that, because not only does Credo match up ideologically, they actually are proactive. And you'll get a taste of that when we return. We'll be right back after this. We are back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program from Credo Action. Are you the director of Credo Action, Becky?
Yeah, I'm the political director at Credo Action. I like that term. It sounds better than executive director. Doesn't it sound like more fun to be the political director?
Indeed, indeed. And I want to talk about what Credo Action does in a broader sense, but first off, I want to talk about, what we're seeing in terms of the debt ceiling, because I know that you guys are constantly thinking about this stuff and strategizing from a progressive, not partisan perspective. And, listeners to this program know that I've been harping on sort of the dangers to the things that are really important to progressives in this context of this big debt ceiling issue. Becky?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Are you there? We lost you for a second. So
yeah.
I wanted to just talk about the context in which, you know, we're seeing now, at least on the political front, that Republicans are paying a bit of a price for this, for the shutdown, and they presumably will for the debt ceiling. But there's another danger here in terms of a grand bargain.
Yes, I mean, Sam, first of all, I just want to say thanks to you for ever since this Tea Party Congress swept in the 2010 elections, you know, since 2011, I mean, you've been one of the strongest voices out there talking about the dangers of the hostage taking around the debt ceiling in particular, and how Democrats have the long-term implications of their strategy of preemptive compromise and caving when Republicans take hostages around this. And finally, you know, it's here we are in October of 2013, Democratic leadership is saying, you know, we're not going to cut a deal on the budget. We're not going to cut a deal on the debt ceiling. These are things that we need to do to let government run, and we can't let a small handful of Tea Party Republicans in the House rule the entire House or tell the White House what to do or overturn the will of the voters. But that's progress, and that's a great thing. I wish they'd done it a couple years ago when we'd been urging them to do so. So it's great that they're doing it now. But I think that what a lot of people aren't hearing from the media out there, if they're not listening to your show, is what a dangerous situation we're in today with regards to this long-term fight that the Koch brothers and the Republicans and the Tea Partiers in the House in particular have been fighting for, and that is to break the back of our social safety net. They want to go after long-term cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. And so while we're hearing in the media this is this fight over Tea Party Republicans wanting to defund Obamacare on the one hand and the president holding strong on the other hand, you know, what if you talk to people in Congress and you look at what's going on, not through a strictly partisan lens but through a progressive lens, what we're seeing now is we're seeing Republicans pushing us to the brink of default to set themselves up for a negotiation where they can get the long-term cuts to benefits to start defunding Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. And on the Democratic side, we have a president who's proposed cuts to these programs in the past as a way to bring down the deficit, which is something that, you know, should not be a priority over jobs and infrastructure and other challenges that our country faces. So you have a president that said he's been willing to do this in the past. You have Republicans bringing us to the brink of tanking the economy, getting very ready to swap their ask to defund Obamacare for cuts to these major programs, cuts that, you know, once we cross that line and start cutting benefits on these big programs, it's going to be very difficult to turn back. And then you have Democrats, the rank and file Democrats, only a handful of which have said publicly that they'll vote no on any kind of deal that includes cuts to these benefits. We have lots of Democrats who said I oppose but cuts to benefits, but they won't come out and say they'll vote against the deal. So I think we're teeing ourselves up for the battle of this presidency, which is, will President Obama be the president to take us backwards on the social safety net and to start the dismantling of these programs, which are the centerpiece of middle class prosperity?
Yeah, I mean, I get more and more concerned as we get closer to this debt ceiling that is the path that we're heading down. Yesterday in his press conference, President Obama was asked, if Congress does pass a clean continuing resolution and a clean debt ceiling bill, those may just be short-term measures. Does your offer to negotiate with them on issues like health care and spending and deficit reduction still stand in the intervening weeks if they pass measures that are just perhaps 6 weeks or 2 months long? President Obama, absolutely. Now, we're already looking at a clean continuing resolution, clean debt ceiling bill, still has us at budget levels that are closer to the Ryan budget than even the cuts that were offered by the president and the Senate. So that's where our baseline is. And if you go out of that this 6 week interim period they're talking about, we know the president has offered change CPI as a way of cutting Social Security. We know there's been Medicare cuts on the table, and we know that we are being told, and rightfully so, that breaching the debt ceiling, whether it's a function of defaulting on our treasury bonds, or even if they come up with some way of prioritizing the interest payments on those, it's going to mean drastic cuts to just about everything else in the country. I mean, immediate recession we're looking at. This sets up, again, sort of the same dynamic, it seems to me, that the administration was setting up with the sequester the first time that just never came to fruition. That being, look, my hands were tied. We had to cut these things. And it seems that that's not just a question of caving, but that's almost part of the president's agenda in terms of building a legacy, reform entitlements.
Well, this is why it's so important that we have, you know, progressive institutions like your show and your listenership that are really engaged on these issues, and they're not lining up behind parties. They're lining up behind progressive ideas and progressive values. And it's the same thing at Credo. You know, one of the cool things about having a social change organization that's funded by a mobile telephone company is that our money comes from our customers' phone bills. And so when we get into a fight like this, we're able to say, hey, you know, we're able to call out the president, and we're able to call out Democrats who want to have a public position of defending these programs but are not willing to go to the mat and do what they need to do to prevent this deal from getting on the table, because this is one of those times where there are forces in the Democratic Party and forces that actually control funds that go to a lot of progressive organizations that you and I know that are more DC braced and more aligned with the party, where we're not hearing them talk about this stuff. And this is a time where we really need to be out there raising holy hell and make it clear, because you know, this is an issue where Democrats and Republicans actually agree, that is those of us outside of Washington, D.C., is that we should not be cutting Medicare benefits, we should not be cutting Social Security benefits. But this is something that a lot of Democrats and Republicans in D.C. agree on. They have fallen prey to this false conventional wisdom that the deficit is a looming problem for our country, and that we need to go to the lengths of dismantling these key social programs in order to bring the deficit down, when what we really need to be doing is investing in infrastructure, building our economy, creating jobs. I mean, we should be basically, I mean, instead of raising the eligibility age for Medicare, we should be lowering it, right? We should be out there. We need Medicare for all, but we shouldn't be changing the Medicare eligibility age for 65 to 67. We need to bring it down to 61, to 60, and let more people take advantage of this program instead of giving all the money to insurance companies and all the healthcare for-profit healthcare organizations that are making bank off of the private insurance system in our country. So this is something where, you know, listeners to your show and you ringing the bell and groups like Credo, you know, who are not just fighting to elect Democrats. That's not what we do. We're fighting for progressive policy, where we need to say, hang on a second, to Democrats, whose side are you on, right? We know the president wants to cut these programs. He does. He said it. He's proposed it. And Republicans, looking for a way out of the brink that they brought us to, they're like, okay, you're not going to defund Obamacare. We know that he's not going to defund the Affordable Care Act. Okay, well, let's cut a deal on what we know you want to cut a deal on, which is these programs. But here's the thing, is if we can get enough Democrats to defy the leadership of the party on the so-called grand bargain to dismantle these programs, and if enough people can back up those Democrats, like we saw when there was a massive opposition to the unilateral bombing of Syria coming in, no matter what the party said, our representatives were like, hey, you know what, the calls are coming in 100-1, I can't do this. Or like we saw with the Democrats who sank the Larry Summers nomination for chair of the Fed. I mean, there were five Democrats on the banking committee who just said, you know what, we're not going to vote this thing out of committee, and the president had to back down, and Larry Summers withdrew his nomination. And it was because those Democrats were backed up by activists like you and me, that were speaking out against this. Democrats can organize to stop this. It's going to take Democrats and Republicans to do it. We know the White House wants to do it. We know some Democrats want to do it. But we can stop it, and it's going to take organizing, and it's going to take a lot of public pressure, and it's got to start now.
I want to talk a little bit about how about the, sort of the process on how you guys determine what you're going to do, both, you know, strategically but also tactically. I mean, because, you know, just I came in today and I was talking to one of my producers, and he asked me, he said, why is Credo so focused on Keystone? And I said, well, it's because they're concerned about climate change. And we both, I mean, we laughed, because usually the answer is, oh, they get their funding from so-and-so, and that person's really interested in climate change or Keystone. And in this instance, how is it that you guys, and I'm talking in a broader sense, but because I'm curious as to, because I know that you guys spent a lot of effort, money, but also mobilized a lot of people who are part of Credo Action to fight against in specific House races in 2012, targeting Tea Party candidates, and you won about, I think, five of those races, if I remember correctly. But I wonder, like, when you look at a situation now and you say, okay, we're seeing some indication that that there may be some electoral advantage to get in 2014, where we can maybe get rid of some of these House members. But at the same time, we also see the looming possibility of a grand bargain. Some people have called it the grand betrayal. Internally, I mean, how do you guys sort of position this? Is it because I know a lot of the folks that work at Credo, I mean, do you guys sit around and you say, okay, we've got to plan this out 60 days, 90 days, 100 days in advance? I mean, how does that process work?
Well, I think it's that's a really great question. You know, we at Credo, one of the things that we do every day is we try and think about, okay, how can we make a difference with the resources that we have on the most important questions of the day? And sometimes that's going to be a 60-day plan or a year-long plan. Sometimes it's going to be like something just happened today. We're going to throw everything that we planned out the window, and we're going to jump on that topic. But one of the most important parts of our process is this, is that we understand that that people join Credo Action and people become Credo Mobile customers because they believe in the activism that they see us involved in, and they believe in the nonprofit, the progressive nonprofit groups that we fund. And so they come to be a part of what we're doing because they believe in what they see, or they participated in a campaign that we've run, and that's the kind of they see it as being effective. So it's not something where we poll them and ask them what to do. It's not something where we get funded by someone to do something specific, so we do that thing because someone gave us money. We have what we call a progressive flank strategy, and we think that there needs to be organizations in our movement that are not pushing for the compromise, or that are not invested in helping leaders no matter what they're doing, because the most important thing is for the party to prevail. We believe that we need to fund and participate and lead on progressive activism for the things that we want to see, not for the compromises. So on the Keystone XL pipeline, for example, that you brought up, you know, climate change is one of the most, if not the pressing, one of the most pressing issues of my generation. And this is a fight that if we don't make progress, you know, soon, you know, it's going to be over. And with the Keystone XL pipeline, a really smart guy named Bill McKibben who started 350.org, he made this argument where he said, you know, the president keeps saying he can't do anything about climate change like he's promised because everything keeps getting blocked in Congress. Well, there is something coming up that's a huge threat to our climate, and it's the Keystone XL pipeline. And this pipeline would tap into Canadian tar sands, some of the dirtiest, most carbon-intensive energy on Earth. And if this pipeline is built across the United States, then then foreign oil companies will be able to take those tar sands out of the ground, pipe it across the United States, refine it on the Gulf Coast, and then ship it to China, where it will be burned, and that it will be so much carbon in the atmosphere, it will accelerate climate change to such an extent that the chief climate scientist of the U.S., James Hansen, called it game over for the climate. But what Bill pointed out about this, and when we heard it, this was just this aha moment, because we've been working on this for a while, but not in this way. He said, you know, this pipeline requires a presidential permit. It's the president's decision and the president's decision alone. And so this is something that Republican obstructionists can't stop. And so all we have to do is convince the president to keep his promise, to do something real about climate change. And when we heard that argument from Bill McKibben, we thought, you know what, this is a fight that's important, and it's a fight that we can win, because we can get hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions of people, who care about climate change and who voted or volunteered or worked for the president to tell the president we're going to draw the line at this and he needs to make this decision. So that's one of those things that we just decided to go all in on because it was a smart strategy. We had the resources that we thought could make a difference in this fight. We knew that we could get in touch with people that are the president's supporters, to ask him to keep a promise he'd already made. And so this was a pipeline that everybody thought was a done deal, and we've been able to stop it. Credo actually has, working with a couple other groups called Rainforest Action Network and the other 98%, we actually have over 75,000 people who have pledged to commit peaceful civil disobedience to stop this pipeline if the State Department recommends that the president approve it. So, you know, that's kind of one example. And then when we get to this question about what's happening with Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security and the president today, I think we all have our inner moral compass about these issues. And some of us have the time and the passion and the disposition to be constantly researching and reading and talking about these issues with others. And this is something where as soon as information pops, because we hear you talking about it on your show, or because it's something that a group Social Security Works has surfaced, or because someone who's a staffer in Congress lets us know that there's a fight that's brewing that we can jump in on, where we just say, okay, we know this is one of the most important things that's going on. We know that the voices of our activists will make a difference, and we get together and we say, well, what is the most important thing we can do right now? What's the smartest strategy that we can deploy our resources in and go all in on this fight? So, you know, a simpler version might be that, you know, we pick a lot of fights, some of which we can't win, some of which we can win, and we try and pick as many fights as we can because, this is our country that's at stake, and there's a lot of people out there in this country that want to make a difference, the kind of people that listen to your show, the kind of people that are Credo customers, and they're just waiting to be asked to help and make a difference. And we see it as our job to say, not that politics happens in Washington, D.C. with a bunch of people that are in politics or work for politicians or work for nonprofits. We think that everyone who cares and is willing to raise their hand and do something should be able to participate in this process. And so it's our role to make sure that all those people, all that capacity, all that passion out there is able to get involved in these fights and help us win, because that's when we win the big things. It's when people who are on the outside of Washington, D.C. are able to organize together and push for the progressive solutions that we want to see. That's when we make a difference, not when we leave politics to the professionals who just happen to work in Washington, D.C.
You know, I'm struck by your frankness in saying that sometimes we pick fights that we know we're not going to win. And that's something that, you know, you rarely hear people say. And it's something that, you know, for a long time in when there was something that we called the blogosphere, that we would talk about the value of waging fights that you weren't necessarily going to win or didn't think you could win, but the value of waging those fights. Would you just talk about that notion? Because I think, you know, to a certain extent, there's a couple of things that I think are very unique about Credo Action relative to a lot of other organizations. I mean, you've mentioned some of them, but I think that explicit part of your agenda, that you're willing to wage fights that you know that probably cannot be won, at least those battles, but there's value to that. Will you speak to that?
Yeah, there's a couple of examples come to mind. I mean, the first example is the fight over the public option. in 2009 and healthcare reform. And when I think back about that fight, it's one where we were very involved in fighting for the public option, and we didn't win the public option. A lot of people gave up on the public option about halfway through the fight. We were not one of those groups. We fought through to the end, and we were able to resurrect it several times when people said it was over. We were able to get it back on the table, and had there been a reconciliation vote early on the healthcare bill, we could have won that. And when we look back on that fight after it was over, one of the things that we thought is that, you know what, we really made a mistake, and we should have been fighting for universal health care. We should have been fighting for health care for all, because if we had fought for health care for all, maybe the compromise would have been the public option. And, you know, I think there's a lot of pressure on a lot of groups not to talk about, you know, fights that we lose, or not to talk about maybe mistakes that they've made, because the way they get funding is by trumpeting victories and talking about how great we are, and that's an important part of how they do fundraising. And I think one of the great things about our model is that we can be pretty much brutally honest, and we try and be honest. If you're on our email list, when we lose a fight, whether it's about the mortgage settlement or an environmental loss, we try and be pretty clear about when we didn't win, and here's what we thought happened, and here's what we're gonna do next. But I do think that that we should have been fighting for universal health care. If I had to go back and do it again, we would have fought for that. And I think there could have been more room for people in the middle than to negotiate for the public option had we been out there pushing really hard for that. And it would allow the president also to be able to say, hey, look, I know that that you don't want to have any kind of public option, but these people out here, they want universal health care, and you know, I can't not give them anything. Let's do a public option. I think that's something that we need, because not only do we learn how to fight, and not only do we get people inspired that actually, you know, people are not inspired by crummy compromises or selling out early. I mean, people do get inspired. By fighting. And so I think it's important to learn to fight, to be willing to fight. And I think that sometimes we actually get a better outcome, even if it's not, what we, actually ask for. Mm. And then you have the situations where you're fighting for something that it seems like you're not going to get, but actually, at some point the facts on the ground change. And then you're able to win, and you can look at the fight over you know, whether we should bomb Syria unilaterally, and Credo was the first big group to oppose the unilateral bombing of Syria, and a lot of groups were kind of holding back, saying we need to see what the president's up to, we don't know, et cetera, We quickly built massive opposition to unilateral bombing on that. But still, it's really hard for the Democratic Party to defy the president. And it was only the offhand, you know, remark by President Kerry saying, well, you know, we wouldn't bomb if for some reason Syria could get rid of the chemical weapons in a week. And then you had, it's like a forced error or something, right? And then you had, the Russians and Syria jump in, and then all of a sudden we have a diplomatic solution to something which could have been our third war in the Middle East. So it's really important to have these fights, even when it makes our friends uncomfortable on the Democratic side. Sometimes it helps them more than they know, but it also is something, if we really believe in what we say we believe in, we've got to get out there and fight for it, because otherwise, the forces on the right are just going to continue to push the moderate Democratic position further and further towards their side,
right.
And we're not going to have any progressive representation in government.
Well, folks, you can go to credoaction.com to see what Credo is up to. There was a couple more things I wanted to talk about, but we're out of time, Becky. I know, I appreciate your staying a little bit longer with me, you're doing great work, and I'm really proud to have you guys sponsoring the program, because you know, I've been a fan for a long time, and I know a lot of the folks who work with you, and I really appreciate the work you guys are doing. Again, it's credoaction.com. Becky Bond, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks, Sam.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. I got a couple more things. I want to talk about this notion of prioritization again. I mentioned it or I went through it quite a bit yesterday on the program in the better half. But I want to just make you understand that when you hear these notions that somehow the blowing through the debt ceiling is no big deal, even the justification that those Republicans, those libertarians, those BS artists are using to say that that we can cover our debt, we're not going to default. The best case scenario, if we cover our debt, our interest payments, is still a catastrophic impact to the economy in this country. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back in just a moment. Hey, Majority Report listeners, you know that we try and put our money where our mouth is when it comes to getting sponsors for the show. And I can't say enough about Credo Mobile. They're our newest sponsor. They're the only progressive cell phone company in the country. This is really the best of both worlds for me. We get to support an organization that fights Republican Tea Party extremists, holds Democrats accountable, funds the progressive movement, fights climate change, and helps keep this show on the air. It's really easy to sign up right now. Go to credomobile.com/Sam to get 25% off your data for the first 2 years. You get true unlimited data, and they'll even give you a buyout credit of $350 to get out of your contract with one of the big corporate providers. Look, they're supporting the show, they're a great product, and they do great political work. It's a win-win-win. Go to credomobile.com/Sam to get that deal right now. Everybody's coming home for lunch these days. Last night there were skinheads on my lawn. Take the skinheads bowling, take them bowling. Take the All right, in the better half of the program, I'll go through the the story about the major foodborne illness outbreak that was first reported, as far as I could tell, last night on Wired Science. There's since been broader reporting. They've actually brought back some furloughed workers from the CDC because it's an emergency, and they're still not nearly at full strength, but this is one of the things that the CDC warned about. You know, the ability for them to track a foodborne illness that goes across state lines. States can do it, but they just don't have the resources to do it state to state. I imagine there are going to be people who, if there are no deaths, are going to be ill and have long-term health implications simply because the CDC couldn't get on this quick enough. You know, the idea of 24 hours when you're talking about something like this makes a big difference. But before we do, I went through this quite a bit on yesterday's better half of the program. I want to touch on it again today because we're seeing more and more written about this. There is a lot of question as to the implications. Now, when we talk about busting through the debt ceiling, understand that the government takes in about 65% of what it pays out in revenue. The other 35% is borrowed. We issue treasury bonds. People buy those bonds. I think it's about every 15 days or so, the treasury pays out interest on those bonds. Bonds mature, some get renewed, but in the meantime, interest is paid out. The first payments of those interest payments, I believe, come up October 31st. Now, the U.S. government, the Treasury, pays 2 million bills a day. 2 million bills a day of this type. And it does so through two different agencies, the Bureau of Public Debt and the Financial Management Service, which, broadly speaking, I mean, there are a bunch of other agencies involved, but broadly speaking, these two agencies, the Bureau of Public Debt handles the U.S. sovereign debt payments through a system called Fedwire. The Financial Management Service handles all of the payments to agencies, vendors through their automated clearinghouse. All of this is computerized. The Republicans, many of them are claiming that you could simply prioritize the payments where you would basically pay off all the interest coming through the debt. The biggest payments are going to be October 15th and then November 1st. Or I should say October 31st and November 15th. But nevertheless, there's still payments that you're paying out on a daily basis. This is a binary process. You would have to shut down all payments to everyone else in the government, including like Social Security and Medicare. It is unclear whether or not the Treasury has even the statutory authority to do this. But let's presume for a moment that they did have the ability. By executive order, they did it in some fashion. Who knows? They found the statutory ability to do it. Let's also assume that they have come up with a plan to do what they have never done ever in the past. Then you have to assume that they're going to be able to execute that plan flawlessly. We know in 1979, there was some glitch. As there was some question about raising the debt ceiling, there was some glitch. It caused about $122 million worth of payments to be slowed by 24 hours. It created an instantaneous rise in interest rates. It reverberated through the economy for 3 months. So let's assume those three things. They find the statutory authority. They have already come up with a plan to do what they've never done before. And then they execute that plan flawlessly. Assuming all that for the sake of argument, the fact of the matter is they would not have the money to pay for the rest of the government. Bloomberg has a piece on this today. Recession looms if Treasury uses tools to prevent a debt default. In other words, even if they service the interest payments on the debt, you would still get a recession because the cutting would be so huge, as according to Jim O'Neill, former chairman of Goldman Sachs Asset Management, who's now a Bloomberg View columnist, it would put the U.S. back into recession. $175 billion less in government spending during November alone. If the government does avoid default, that wouldn't mean the economy would escape a recession, said Michael Feroli, chief U.S. economist for J.P. Morgan Chase. A slump would be certain to fall if the choice is between a default and cutting other outlays to avoid one. In the first case, he said, we'd have a recession and a financial crisis. In the second case, we'd have a recession. This is basically what I was saying yesterday. We either have a economic and financial crisis or just an economic crisis. A 4% shock that is based upon what the cutback in spending would mean for the economy. In a 2% growth economy is very much recessionary, says Michael Hansen, senior U.S. economist at Bank of America in New York. That's the bottom line. All of this talk of it's not a big deal and this and that is either just a lie or they're deluded. And why would they lie? Because they want to make it clear that we just may be crazy enough to do this. With all that said, I still think the primary concern is going to be watch out for that 6-week extension that takes us into December which is the metaphorical equivalent of those one-cheek sneaks that you get on a Friday, as Janine used to call them. When they want to drop that silent but deadly news. That's when the grand bargain would be struck. And that's why it is so important now to register and to continue to pressure congresspeople, senators, do not cut Social Security. Do not cut Medicare. I've talked ad nauseum on the failure of the experiment of the 401k. How we have, if to the extent that we have any need to do any entitlement reform, it is to expand Social Security and, frankly, to drop Medicare to 55. Maybe a buy-in is fine. That's the reality, folks. This is the threats for and a progressive agenda are huge at this time, because it's so easy to say, like, I had no choice. These guys were going to drive us off a cliff. But we know, again, those two things in President Obama's bucket list. One, to de-weaponize the debt ceiling, and two, to get entitlement reform. Everything else is just commentary, as they say. All right, we're going to take a break when we head into the better half of the program. Reminder, the show is sponsored by Credo Mobile. Credo Mobile essentially pays for Credo Action. And so it's your dollars that are going to support. I mean, literally, Michael and I had this exchange today when he came in. He's like, why are they so focused on Keystone? And I said, we both laughed just because they care about the environment, because it is so atypical. Credo is offering a deal for Majority Report listeners. You go to credomobile.com/Sam. 25% off your data for the first 2 years. They have a true unlimited data program. And they will pay up to $350. They will give you a $350 credit on your bill if you incur any switchover costs. They got Android-based phones, Samsung S3, S4. They got HTC One. They got phones that ranges in price, I think, from $49 up to, I don't know, $100, maybe a little more. I'm not exactly sure. But you can check it all out at credomobile.com/Sam. Very happy to have them as sponsors. I wish we had half a dozen Credos. And then we'd have ads all over this frickin' place. You can also support the show by becoming a member, of course. We need your membership. We don't have many sponsors, frankly. It doesn't happen too often. It's your membership that still drives this show. I think we're down to 99.1% with the Credo sponsorship membership driving the show. If you buy Amazon junk, you know the deal. Go to Majority FM. You can do it. Podcastawards.com. If you haven't nominated us yet for Best News in Politics and People's Choice, go there. You can nominate us once. The voting will start in a couple of weeks, and then you can vote every single day. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll head into the better half. 646-257-3920. We'll take your IMs. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. See you in a minute.